For February the 7th, 2025, we talk about Heroes of Hammerwatch 2, Citizen Sleeper 2, Rimworld Anomaly, and much more. Welcome to Level 531. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're doing a three-style tonight.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you're back for a second week in a row, Jala.
Surprising everyone, including me.
It's good. You had games to talk about. You had a backlog.
I do. And as a matter of fact, after this episode, I will be caught up, which means then I need to start playing more games.
And that is the only reason to play games, is to talk about them on shows, I'm led to believe.
The happiest curse to have. I need to relax and play some more games.
Oh, gosh. Who's got something going on?
Well, the snow is gone.
That's good.
It's not snowing here anymore. Summer is starting.
How aggressive is summer starting?
Well, it's like in the 80s this week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, 83, I think, today.
So. Just normal weather patterns here. Nothing to see.
Well, in Houston, we can still have, usually we can still have a cold snap even in through March, the beginning of March, but I don't think that's happening.
Well, at least you'll be able to, work out outside again.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Exactly. That'll be cool.
Yeah. Anything else going on?
No.
Yeah. really not me either. Nothing that's not like based on like my responding to the horrors. I did go and do my stocking up before the tariffs went in, and then they didn't for now. So I've got a whole bunch of pasta sauce if anybody needs it.
Yeah, I told Dave that we already do a lot of cooking from scratch anyway, and we can do things like make vegan meat and make vegan cheese and make vegan milk out of things in the pantry. So and butter and all the different kinds of staples. So really, we just need to stock up on very certain key ingredients and then just hit the farmer's market.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, at the very least, I've got a stock. I didn't buy anything that I didn't, that I don't plan on using. Right. The only thing that was like out of the ordinary, I normally don't buy like flour, but, I was like, okay, if bread gets expensive, I've got flour and yeast. So there's that. And I don't know, homemade bread is good too. So
I just got a new book about New World sourdough, and it's written by a guy from Honduras. So it has a bunch of different recipes, not just like, like European recipes. So very cool. I'm looking forward to digging into that. Of course, like once you make the, the sourdough starter stuff, then you have a monster in your fridge you have to feed.
Yeah, I don't have the I don't have the patience for a sourdough, and I definitely would forget to tend to the monster that I have to feed. So I just have a real simple recipe that I use. It's just flour, dry active yeast, and some honey to get it started, and then that's it. And you can also do beer bread too. That's good, but it's a little bit dense.
I'm already at my quota of one monster to feed, which is my stomach, so I don't want any more than that.
Reminders on your phone, that's all you need.
I know.
Anyway. Yeah. moving right along.
Moving along. Ben, how about you? What's going on?
I got a couple of things. I've continued Academy Award movie watching. I saw Anora last night, and I saw A Real Pain over the weekend, and they were both good, so...
Woot!
Worth checking out.
I have not heard of either of those movies. What are like the elevator pitch?
So A Real Pain is written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg, and it's kind of like a buddy road trip movie, kind of, but also dealing with like family issues and like depression and stuff. So it's kind of, it's good. It's like a nice, like emotionally cathartic movie. Mm-hmm. And Anora won the Palme d'Or at Cannes this year, and it's by the Sean Baker, the director of like Tangerine and the Florida Project.
Okay, and so
it's the latest movie, and it's kind of about classism. The premise is like a sex worker marries like a son of a Russian oligarch, and it kind of looks at that relationship for an hour and a half, for I guess 2.5 hours. But yeah,
neat.
And then outside of that, I played finally Gaia Project with the expansion that I had gotten this expansion like right before I threw my back out and had not gotten a chance to play a full game of it. So I was really happy to finally table that.
Was it attempting to carry Gaia Project and the expansion that threw your back out?
I don't think so, but the timing is there that it could be a culprit. I think it's more the lack of core strength that did it for me than anything else.
Ah, you know.
But we could blame it on that if we want. But no, I was very impressed with it. I played as one of the base factions, and because the expansion factions had already gotten picked by other people. Mm-hmm. But it was still like a new experience. The expansion basically adds like a new marketplace you can go to do most of your other actions. And it's like 4 different ones kind of spread out through the map. So it was a lot of fun. So I look forward to playing that again sometime soon. But yeah.
My joke is based on my guess that since this is a board game with expansions, that this is like one of those massive, you know, thousands of pieces like Twilight Imperium things.
It's not too crazy, but there is definitely some of that to it. It's mostly, it takes a really long time to explain how the game works, but it's easy to play once you know how to play it.
Okay.
So it's like a lot of things with low complexity. And so, yeah, like it literally takes you like an hour to explain to someone like how to play the game. Oh. So that's a bit daunting, but once you know it, it's personally my favorite board game. So I think it's worth it.
Ben, you started talking about games.
Oh shoot! Yeah, but this doesn't count. These are board games. Yeah.
Did you was this with work folks, or was it?
I made a board game group a year or two ago.
Oh, that's right, you did
for people in the area, and so yeah, it's all those people who are new group of friends. So yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I mean, since we're champing at the bit to talk about games, I guess. We were joking. If there's a combination of us that can do a quick episode, it is this combination.
Right. Speedrun.
Speedrun, baby. Not unwelcome at this point. Let's talk about games. To do that, we need to do the regular kind of show, What with the Grind, the Multiplayer, and the End Boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Who has something new?
I have something new.
Well, I also have something new, but I went first last time. So, Ben,
you go.
Please.
All right. I'll take it if it's being given to me. So I have 2 new things, but one I'll talk about at length and the other one I'll just touch on. The new thing that I'm most excited about is I started playing a game called Heroes of Hammerwatch. I believe this came out in like January is when it went live. I'm not sure if they had like an early access period or not, but I'm pretty sure they did. So this is a game that was not on my radar at all. I saw a streamer named Jorbs who typically plays Slay the Spire play it.
Yeah.
And then you talked about Jorbs. I found out one of my friends, college friends plays it that we have a Discord channel with. And so we ended up playing that for our like multiplayer game night last week. The premise of this game is it's a rogue like, not a light, but a like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically D&D classes, and it's kind of like a bullet hell, but kind of like a enemies run at you and you have to kill them really quick type game. But it's in the style of D&D where you pick different classes from D&D, like a rogue or a paladin, or I think I was rolling as a wizard for the past week. And you basically go on runs where you're going up against what, quote unquote, the Dark Citadel is like this thing that you're trying to make your way through. And it gets progressively harder as you go. There's boss battles. And then there's like a sense of progression in the game. So in between runs, there's a town that you have. It's kind of similar to like Bastion in the format of the game.
Mm-hmm.
For all those who remember that game, where you basically on whatever runs you go on, you'll gain experience and level up. And so you can get new like abilities as your class or level up current abilities that you have. But then you also get like gold and resources like stone and wood. And you use those to invest in your town and level up your town. And basically the town will do different things to benefit different items that you have on your runs or somehow improve like your odds at winning a run that you're on.
Okay.
So it could be like making a potion shop or making a combat training ground. And then you can pay resources to level up your abilities there.
Yeah.
And so it's a multiplayer game, but you can also play single player. And it works really well where the town is persistent for you. Mm-hmm. So you can pick a new class and you're starting off with the same town. And so there's some things that'll be, I guess, easier for you with that. And then there's some things that you'll still need to progress for each class that you're playing as. But yeah, the general flow of the game is it's almost like a retro game where it's like you're going around a map and exploring it. There's a fog of war. You'll have like three or four buttons. It's kind of like aggressively mapped on your mouse where like the forward and back buttons were defaulted to some of the spells that I had. Mm-hmm. So it really benefits you to kind of quickly mash your hands on your mouse to do all the attacks that you need to do at once to try and kill everyone as you can, as the mobs will run at you.
Sounds like a twin stick shooter kind of thing.
A bit, yeah, but it is WASD, but it has that same sort of feeling, yeah. Where, and then I guess the other aspect of it is as you're doing the runs, there's basically modifiers that you'll get that are just per run. So it might be things like you gain experience faster or you have higher defense, higher attack, that sort of thing. They'll have class-specific ones where it's like if you use this magic ability, then you'll have this side effect when you do it. Like it'll deal fire damage as well.
Yeah.
So I've just played as the wizard class and I've played a little bit as the rogue class. I'm trying to get a feel for each one of them. And what makes it even more interesting is you can play multiplayer with everybody. It'll just play in one person's town, but mm-hmm. The progress that you make on your character will persist on your game.
Okay.
So it's not like a lost feeling or you don't feel like you're losing progress by doing it. So that can be fun because then you can play around with combinations where it's like you can have a paladin that can heal people and then you can have a wizard that can attack at range and then you can have like a tank that's up front, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And kind of do it that way. Usually that goes out of the window. Once you have like mobs of people running at you, it's kind of everyone for themselves and you try and survive as best you can.
Yeah.
But there's some more fun meta with that too, where it's like if you die, you can revive somebody, but then everybody takes a permanent hit to their top end health.
Okay.
And so... Yeah, so sometimes it's like, all right, we're just going to leave you until the end of the map, and then we'll revive you once if you're just, like, not having a good time right now.
Yeah, especially if you're just going to die again. Like,
yeah, exactly. Or sometimes you might die in a spot that's, like, hard to get to revive, so then you kind of have to leave them and then get them at the next map. But this has been a lot of fun. I've only probably done like half a dozen to a dozen runs so far. The runs do take like maybe 1 to 2 hours. Like take a bit of time. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that changes like as you progress through it, like as you start beating boss battles, you start to find like shortcuts so you can kind of progress through the run more quickly. Mm-hmm. But there is like, you do need to level up your characters to progress in the game. Cause you get to a certain point where it's like, you just get killed by the regular enemies and you just no way to stop it. If you're like, once you're so weak, you know, in the game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then the other thing is, once you hit level 10, I think you max out at level 20, but once you hit level 10, you can do specializations. And so you can choose kind of how you want to evolve your class and then get, like special moves for that. So overall, I had not heard about this game at all, but I was like super impressed by it and very happy with how it's put together.
What's lost between runs? Like if you really screw up, like what do you lose?
Yeah. So whenever you die, you get I think a 40% tax on whatever resources you have, which is kind of painful. There are a kind of like birds that almost look like out of Valheim that will appear on some of the maps. And when you see them, you can give them all the resources that you have. And so it's kind of like a checkpoint and then those will go back to your town untaxed. But you almost, I mean, I haven't beat a run yet, so you almost assuredly die every time until you start getting towards more of the end game. So basically that's what you lose. You don't lose anything experience-wise for your character, and you don't lose anything that exists in your town already, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Any modifiers you've picked, though, like on your run, like those get reset, you know, like things like gain experience or, you know, there's like just per run buffs that you'll accrue throughout a run.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds neat. Like handling the mm-hmm. meta progression as building up the town feels good. Also, I mm-hmm. think this is like it's sounding a little bit like Dark Cloud a little bit.
Mm.
Although that is more about designing the town more than anything. Yeah, that's just a PS2 action RPG that had kind of an ActRaiser, like, you know, as you went into the dungeon, you like rescued shopkeepers and stuff and sent them back.
Yeah, and it's, I guess I didn't mention, but it is like more retro, like art aesthetic where it's like pixelated mostly. So mm-hmm. pretty simple graphics, but yeah, I definitely highly recommend it, especially if you like games like Slay the Spire or things like Dead Cells. It definitely scratches that sort of itch.
Mm-hmm.
So
that particular kind of loop. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a Dennis game.
The play sounds a little bit like, did you ever play Children of Morta?
I don't think I did. No.
It's a story-based roguelike, that, like the different characters roughly map on to different classes, mm-hmm. and like it's all like members of one family that are going out on the runs, you know, trying to mm-hmm. I think one of their family members is ill and you're trying to find the cure for it, but that kind of class-based mm-hmm. twin stick kind of deal sounds familiar.
Yeah The combat is the thing that's like kind of, I don't know if it's necessarily weak, but it's just something that I'm not used to, where it's like not exactly bullet hell, but it's much more action-y than something like Slay the Spire. But mm-hmm. kind of how you choose to level up and kind of how you choose to approach like aggroing a group of people and then fighting them off, like that's kind of the more tactical part of it.
Yeah.
A lot of that goes out of the window when you're playing multiplayer, where it's like you just see someone running towards the group and a bunch of people are following them. And so it's like, oh, well, I guess mm-hmm. we're all running now.
Train to zone. Yeah.
Yeah. And they have a lot of good like kind of game theory push your luck type things, where one, they have secret rooms in some of the dungeons that are really cool, where since it's like a top down like 2D type world, you kind of have an edge that's like a castle wall on a lot of the maps, and there will be some where there's like a little crack in that edge, and if you notice it, you can shoot at it and knock it down, and there's a secret room there. And additionally, there's like a mini map and that sort of thing as well. If you're near it, there's like a tiny little triangle that'll show that there's like a crack in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you notice it, you can get the secret room, but it is legitimately like hard to notice it if you're not looking for it. And then the other thing is they have these things called like trap rooms, where there will be an upgrade there, but you have to run through like either arrows on the wall or like statues that breathe fire. It feels very Elden Ring-like. When you're going in the like crypts or whatever, the catacombs,
mm-hmm.
Where you have to like run through there to get to the upgrade. And if you mess up and die, then even if you're in multiplayer, it can be hard to revive you. And if you're playing single player, then you die and the run is over. So it is, if you get really good at them, then it's, you know, an awesome buff. But if you're kind of early in the game, it's kind of very, very risky to go for them.
Mm-hmm.
But small things like that are like really nice touches to the experience.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds neat. This is Heroes of Hammerwatch 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
They have a couple other. They have like the first one. I think there's one that's just Heroes of Hammerwatch that's like different than the first one. But yeah, this is the newest from them.
So gotcha.
It's probably not a coincidence that it's like, you know, their second or third time making this type of game and mm-hmm. kind of the level of polish that it has.
Yeah.
So. If there's no more questions about that, I'll talk about the other game that I got.
Okay.
Sure.
Which is Citizen Sleeper 2, Starward Vector. This one is just on my radar because I remember playing the first one, whenever that came out, like 2 or 3 or 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And just going through that one really, really quickly. So I picked this one up. I haven't had a lot of time to get deep into it. I've only played like maybe a half an hour to an hour of it. It is a lot more story forward than I remember the first game being. I know there's a lot of reading in the game, But I was kind of hit with a lot of that early on. So I just kind of know the setup of the game, which I believe is going to be consistent for everyone. But there, you do have a choice. There's three different classes you can play as. And I think this is something different in this game versus the first one, which is depending upon which class you pick, they will just hardline restrict your advancement in one of the attributes.
That is good, because by the end of the first Citizen Sleeper, which is a game that I had a pretty good time with, like for a game that is so much about this kind of transhumanist horror of being a person inhabiting a broken robot, and has this really great metaphor for just like how much you can get done in a day, somebody with a disability, like, that goes out the window about halfway through. And at the end, you're like just an omnicompetent helpfulness elemental, you know? So finding a way to put a hard limit on your skills that way feels like a good call.
Yeah, I don't mind that choice at all. And yeah, I think the other thing that was awkward about the first game, or maybe not awkward, but the other thing that was interesting about the first game is you kind of choose when to end the game, because there's many paths to the game end. So basically whenever you want to check out, you can. But yeah, you're kind of maxed out when you get to that point. So yeah, I haven't done too much. I've only gone through maybe 2 or 3 days, and I'm only just starting to see some of the newer systems that they have in the game. Primarily, it looks like there's kind of like a system where you can get groups of friends and go on kind of like runs to places outside of like the main base that you're on. But story wise, it feels pretty similar to what the first one was. Instead of like running from kind of like whatever Blade Runner force of that was going to shut you down in the first one, you're running away from like a specific person in this one. And the premise is you don't have any memories. Like you were doing like a reset or a reformat on your hard drive or whatever and woke up in the middle of that. And so all the memories you have are gone, but you have a companion who was with you before that. And so they're kind of trying to deal with the fact that you don't remember them or any of the experiences that you had together. But other than that, so other than those two things, it does feel to be like a Citizen Sleeper type Citizen Sleeper game. You roll and die, you're putting them in places, you're pushing your luck. It is still a good system with how they make it very simple, where it's like half neutral, half positive if it's a 5, or 100% positive if it's a 6, or, you know. So I appreciate that. And yeah, in the RPG aspect of it, it's like you basically get +1 and 1 attribute depending on what class you pick. And so you're kind of searching for those types of jobs and seeing how to maximize doing those or using your bad dice for those. I'll be interested to see if the meta is any different in this game versus the first one, because I know the first one, you get introduced pretty early on to an element where there's places you can go where you can use your lower value die, and then that was like game over, where it's like, all right, I'm going to go to all those places to get rid of my low ones, I'm going to go to all the other places, use my high ones, and I don't have to think too hard about it anymore. So we'll see how it progresses with that. I hope it's not as simplistic as that, but
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, for people who like to play Citizen Sleeper, there's a new one out. So have at it.
I'm surprised. I didn't know that was out this soon. I wasn't especially paying it. I knew that this was coming, but yeah, it snuck up on me, I guess.
Yeah, I don't even think I had it on my wish list, but I knew it was coming out soon and somehow put it together that it just came out last week. So yeah.
Cool.
That's all I got.
Okay.
Neat.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Okay, so the first one that I've got to talk about isn't a video game, but I want to talk about it anyway just for a minute, because other people talk about board games and stuff. So this will be mine for one that I want to mention. So I kickstarted a solo journaling RPG a couple of years ago, and it's called Be Like a Crow. And I got it in, and it got put on a shelf because I was extremely busy. And I dug it out at some point when Dave was in the middle of his recovery from some medical stuff. And as a result, we were working on doing some journaling, like this solo journaling game. And so the way that these work, if people have never heard of this type of game before, is that you have like a rule set, and different types of solo RPGs do different things and have different levels of complexity with like stats and stuff that you have to track. Some of them have stats, some of them are more emphasizing the narrative element. This one uses just a pen and paper or a Word doc or something, and then a deck of playing cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can shuffle through to pick everything. So in this one, you play a Corvid of your choice in a game setting of your choice, working through quests to complete your life cycle until you are an old crow and then you can retire. Mm-hmm. So you can play like all the different Corvid species are represented, or at least the primary ones are represented, and you can pick between them, and they all have their own dispositions and different skills that they are particularly good at. So you can play like a jackdaw, raven, magpie, carrion crow, or a rook.
Mm-hmm.
And the settings, at least in the original base game, include a modern urban setting, a cyberpunk setting, a gothic setting, fantasy, steampunk, and Ravens of the Tower, which is based out of the Tower of London in like the 1800s or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And So Dave and I are playing different like settings. He is playing the gothic one and I am playing Ravens of the Tower.
Mm-hmm.
There are expansions for this as well that give you other settings. There's one for Lovecraft or Cthulhu. There's a Wild West one. There is a pirate one that's based on Mork Borg, because Mork Borg finds its way into every TTRPG.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And also there was one, I don't know when it was released, called Pex West, which is Seattle based. It's based on Seattle specifically. Pex West. So there's the reference to games, to video games. So you do all of this. You use your playing cards to set up your first mission, your random events and everything. It's kind of funny because Dave's first mission is across his map, because there's like maps that, and you know, you have a starting spot and then, you know, your first quest lands somewhere on that map. And his was across the map, epic in scale, like there's this thing that's happening and also it could ruin the world.
A lot of responsibility for a crow.
Yeah. Meanwhile, mine was like, hey, it's over there, like one hex away from where you are currently. And I finished it and moved right along with my life. And now I'm on my second mission. But Dave's got to like compose this long-winded story of what's going on with this whole thing. And he's really getting into it when he's writing it. Now that he's recovered and everybody's back to work and very busy, we have been slowing down with working on it. But we basically sit down, we work on it together at the kitchen table, and then we just kind of stop and read our stories aloud to each other, you know, to follow each other's stories. And eventually this will probably be read aloud on our bonus show, A Glass Darkly.
Mm-hmm.
So, that'll be a thing at one point or another. But anyway, it's fun. And as a result of that, I picked up some other, like, because you can get PDFs for different solo RPGs like this, which are just basically writing prompts.
Yeah.
You know, you can get these different places. DriveThruRPG, for example, has a bunch of them that are under $5 PDF versions. So
finding these, like a bunch of them, was one of the neat parts of going to the Origin convention down in Columbus last year. The primary reason I went there was to see Dennis, because I hadn't seen him in forever. But you get a bunch of these just like indie published or self-published, almost like little packets of the criteria for these. And so I got a bunch that just looked neat. I've not played them, but I've flipped through them and stuff. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's like the chronic problem of any TTRPG, right?
Yeah,
like, I'm going to buy this rule book. It looks so cool. And then like you never play it, but you have that rule book and it's really cool.
Yeah. So, I read them.
Oh, yeah. Like, you could read them, you could flip through them and everything, but like the actually playing, now that's a whole nother commitment you got to make there.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And also, fun fact, Mapamundi, which I mentioned, the Kickstarter is live now and it funded in an hour.
Holy shit.
In an hour. And they also have a solo version of that available as like a supplemental material. So you can also solo RPG that as well.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's a map making RPG, right?
No. Oh. Mappa, I know it sounds like it is one from the title. Mm-hmm. No, it is an ecological exploration non-combat RPG where you're basically, there has been this big thing that happened to the world called the Flux, and the Flux has separated societies from one another. It's not apocalyptic. It's more like, you know, like an era of the earth has changed. And now there's these constant storms that are separating out different communities from one another. And so a lot of knowledge was lost. You are a chronicler who is going out to study the creatures of the world or the flora, the fauna, whatever, and learn about them and, you know, chronicle everything and bring that back to rebuild the knowledge base of humanity.
Okay.
So it's kind of like George, the primary person from Three Sail Studios, who I interviewed, said that it's kind of like a response to Monster Hunter, but like Monster Hunter crossed with Pokemon, like Pokemon Snap or something. You know, you're catching them, you're not fighting them.
Yeah.
You are not trying to kill them. You're not trying to take their parts. You're just looking at them and learning about them and, you know, bringing this information back and stuff like that. So it's a cool, cool concept. The art is fantastic. Look it up if you don't know what this looks like.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful. And definitely, like, this Kickstarter is going for like a month. So get in on that for sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the only reason I brought up map, I guessed that was because I half remembered it, but B, like, the map making RPGs are in a real similar kind of boat, real similar genre to the journaling RPGs.
Right.
I only know about those because of friend of the network, Tyler Crumrine, doing Beak Feather and Bone, another crow based.
Yes.
Crow based game. Yeah.
Right. So I'll shift from that into actually talking about some video games now. So the first one I've got to talk about is called Mad Father. It is a 2012 horror game created by Sin and published by Miscreants Room. The Steam version was released by AGM Playism in 2016, and a remake was released in 2020. That remake is what I played on Steam, and it goes on sale a lot. So like, if you want to check this out, absolutely, you can do it very easily. In this game, you play as Aya Drevis, an 11-year-old girl who breaks into her father's basement laboratory to learn about his horrible research. Her mom had died some time ago, presumably from illness, because she had been very sick for a long period of time. And so this little girl, Aya, lives alone in the mansion with her father and his assistant, Maria. And Aya is aware that her father captures, experiments on, and kills people in the basement, and also had an extramarital affair with the much younger Maria, whom he continues to be in a relationship with. Basically, if you like Corpse Party, Viviette, or Pocket Mirror, Goldener Traum, which are all things I've talked about on this show before, you will likely like this. It's also been compared to Sweet Home and Resident Evil. And Steam's rating for the remake is 10 out of 10. So whatever you think of Steam ratings, there you go.
Yeah. So the Resident Evil or Sweet Home comparison, like, is there, like,
it's in a mansion.
Okay. So I was gonna, all right. So it takes place in a location. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but it's not from a, it's not from like a mechanical standpoint. Like, this is a Corpse Party style RPG maker horror game.
Yeah. This is like an RPG maker adventure horror game. There's not like combat that you have to go through or anything. So
what horror places is this, What horror places does this go? Like, is it Spooky Doll kind of stuff?
Yes.
Like, it looks like? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's just, I see a bunch of spooky dolls sewed together.
Yeah, they telegraph it real, like, they just put it out there. So, yes.
Okay. Huh. No, I had seen this. You know, this is kind of like floated around in lists of RPG Maker horror games. I have not seen it. I have not heard it described.
Yeah.
It is interesting and fun. Again, if you like any of those other games that I had mentioned, by the way, Vivian is a damn good game. I was thinking about that when I was playing through this game, and I'm like, that's such a good game. And then Pocket Mirror, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know Corpse Party has its problems, but I still have a soft spot in my heart for the first one, the original version.
Anyway. Yeah. I wish that wasn't like.
The remake is so.
Yeah.
But whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it's not as gory as something like a Corpse Party, though. So it's not that level of gore. It's more like a Viviette level of gore, if you know the difference between those two things. So I don't want to say much more because I don't want to spoil it. So do people have questions about that mad father?
No, I was just going to ask if there was mechanical rigor to it.
No, it's pretty straightforward adventure puzzle-y type deal.
Does it branch like Corpse Party does? Alternate endings of things?
Yeah, there are some alternate endings that you can get for this. So there is that to it. Mm-hmm. It's limited. I think it's like two or three branches. So yeah.
Cool.
Neat. Moving on. The last one that I've got to talk about is El Hijo, A Wild West Tale. This is a 2020 family-friendly spaghetti western non-violent stealth puzzle game where you play as a six-year-old boy trying to find his mother. And I was hoping Dennis would be on so I could tell him about this because it seems like something that he might want to try out with his kids, but whatever.
This art style is gorgeous. The coloring on that.
Cute. It is cute. It's developed by Honig Studios and Quantum Frog, published by Handy Games. The journey begins when a farmer and her son are attacked by bandits who raise their farm to the ground. The mother decides to leave El Hijo at a secluded monastery in order to protect him. However, he decides that the monastic life is not for him and decides to escape. There's no words to anything that's happening. This is like one of those word lists that we're going to show you through the body language and the movements and stuff, what's going on. So it's not a text heavy type of game, which is part of why it's family friendly. Like anybody can, you know, play this, and the kid doesn't even have to know how to read to be able to play the game.
Yeah.
So it's great.
It also helps with just universality, right? Yeah. Like, you know, there's no language barrier.
Question: how do you spell El Hijo? I'm trying to Google this.
E L, and the next word is H I J O.
Okay.
Spanish for the sun. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I said the boy, but that's El Nino, like the weather formation.
Yes. So this game has pretty simple mechanics, but like they build on each other, and then like as the thing continues, the puzzle elements get more complex. So it naturally ramps up as you go. And something that I like is that there's little to no punishment for failure. There's like a slight setback, but there's a really robust autosave system. So you don't have to fuddle with trying to save it yourself, but also you don't have to worry about being set back too far if you fail. And of course, we already mentioned it's got very cute graphics to it.
Yeah.
So I do have a couple of complaints, though.
Okay.
It introduces you to being able to use a slingshot to break bottles, just as an example of a thing.
Oh.
But then that's not something that you need to even do in the level that they introduce it to you at all. Like, it's just there. There's bottles to hit, but they don't do anything for you. And so I sat there fucking with it because I'm like, they told me about this for a reason. I definitely need to do this. And so I was sitting in this one little area. It also has, and this is the same level I'm talking about here, it also has sections of the maps that you don't even need to go through. Mm. And they added it for flavor, I guess.
Okay.
And so I ended up hanging out there trying to break these bottles over and over again, trying to like get the attention of these guys so I could sneak by, you know, And then like, I didn't even have to be in that area. So even though I was like, I can't get past this part, and I was messing with it for like half an hour, Dave is there and he's looking at it. He's like, I don't know, maybe if you do this. We were sitting here messing with it for so long, and we didn't even have to be there. It was a different place.
Nobody asked if the door was locked.
Yeah, it was just right there. It was ridiculous. It was so ridiculous. So that was totally pointless, and that kind of irritated me mildly, as you might imagine. So, you know, there's that kind of a thing that you have to deal with. So,
yeah.
Anyway, I would still recommend this. I played consistently for maybe half of the game before I just kind of petered out. And by the way, you get to not just play the boy, you get to play the mom as well.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, I still would suggest this. If you play it one or two scenes at a time and spread it out so you don't get fatigued by like the repetitive play. And I might go back to this, but I also might not go back to it because I see what it's doing. And I don't think it's going to have like a narrative payoff that's going to incentivize my completing it. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I were playing this with kids, that would be like the ideal thing.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
like this is 100% like something to play with some kids. So I would recommend this to folks who are looking for something lighthearted that you just kind of fiddle around with. Just make sure you look at the entire damn map because there might be some areas you don't even have to futz with. And Steam rates this 7 out of 10. So, you know, it recognizes there are a few potential problems.
That sounds about right, based on what you're saying. I mean, like that introducing an item distant from where you need to even learn what its use case is, that's pretty basic.
Right.
Yeah. A bit of a game design oversight, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would they introduce this thing unless I actually need this thing, but I don't? Okay, you know.
Does
you
the
convince
mom use
me.
A slingshot?
Huh?
Does the mom use a slingshot too?
I think she has equivalent. If she doesn't have a slingshot, she has equivalent. So
yeah.
Okay.
Also introducing something that is a weapon. Yeah, is strange in a nonviolent game. Mm. Yeah.
Well, the slingshot's only used to like hit stuff, not people. So you know, like you're not actually hitting anybody with it. So
yeah.
I guess that's good because, you know, slingshots are things that for some reason people in America associate with children, particularly little boys. And so like, if they are like, don't hit anybody with this slingshot, all you can do is hit stuff. Like it's promoting the right values here.
I'm looking at video of this. I'm thinking, man, video games owe a debt to Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah.
Like just in terms of visualizing, you know, sound in a stealth game, right? Like just that little aura showing you exactly where it is. Like it's so weird that we had like 2D or limited perspective stealth that didn't visualize sound like that. Looks neat. I'm probably not going to play it because it doesn't sound like it's for me. Sounds like its heart's in the right place.
Yeah. It's a cute little game and, you know, it's not definitely for everybody, but, it does have a place and that place is probably gifted to Dennis if I can just buy him a copy. So,
you know, somebody with kids and appreciate the, you know, a plucky adventure story. So that's all for you. That's Be Like a Crow, Mad Father, and El Hijo. The store that sells Be Like a Crow, the publisher site, has an enamel pin that's a crow and it says Be Like a Crow.
Yep.
And I was looking at it, just like, even divorced from that being a game, that just sounds like good advice.
Yeah. That's like a leftover from the Kickstarter. That was a bonus from the Kickstarter. So yeah.
I've got one that I've been playing. I have needed a whole game to stop my mind from setting itself on fire.
Yes. Mm.
So I have been playing a bunch of RimWorld.
Cool. Oh.
Yeah. How familiar are people here with RimWorld?
From what context? I own it and I've played the tutorial, but my question is are you making a worse world in the game to make you feel better about the real world?
I'm trying to do the best I can. I'm not like leaning into the crapulence. That's a little bit of a problem that I have with it, actually, is just the there's a lot that's in there that just kind of feels like it's designed for the shitty little toy torturing neighbor from Toy Story. What's the name? Sid. There's a lot of stuff that's real Sid coded. in there. This is a colony builder kind of sim. It is like it's a Dwarf Fortress alike, where you are controlling a group of survivors. Like the basic scenario is that your ship has crash landed on this distant world far away from like the solar system or galactic core or whatever. And you have to build a colony and survive in very inclement circumstances. That might involve wild animals attacking, raiders, cannibals, all kinds of stuff like that. And also just very harsh conditions. Like this is a city builder, personnel manager, where a bunch of stuff is simulated. Like, temperature is a really big deal. Like, just because if you are not managing, like room temperature indoors, like your little guys, they're called your little pawns, can get like heat stroke. Similarly, like when winter comes in, freezing is a really big deal and food grows more slowly. So you have to stock up before winter. All of this while climbing up the tech tree and dealing with bigger and bigger threats that start showing up as the as your colony gets nicer. The main way that you expand your personnel, there are like random events that will happen where like occasionally like some people will just like wander in and ask to join. But the kind of the main way that you get more people is to when raiders attack, fight them to the point where they can't run away and then imprison them. And then your person that you have assigned to be a warden will convince them to join the colony, which feels weird and coercive and bad because I don't want to run like a little prison colony, but like, you know,
it's still like a Uno reverse card to the whole Book of the Road.
Yes. Happy ending. Like the game calls itself like a storytelling, like a generative storytelling game or something like that. And that does kind of pop up, like, because so many different things are simulated, the different pawns have different kind of capabilities and preferences and stuff. And it is all of these systems that are just kind of interacting with each other. You know, like I was just puttering along, and then this like emissaries from the Empire that kind of rules the region where I landed kind of showed up and asked for tribute, or else there was going to be an issue, and I had to like give them stuff that amounted to a certain value. And you know, the quickest way to do that is to like give them one of your colonists. Like they're looking for slaves, is what it is, but I'm not keeping slaves. And so I was like, all right, well, let's just get a bunch of resources together to get them out of my hair. I'm trying to run my colony as humanely and, you know, like non-hierarchically as possible because I am who I am. But like the guy who I sent to make the trade was the highest, the highest social skill. So I could get, you know, not have to give them as much, you know, so I gave them what I needed to give them. And, they gave him a title in the Empire, made him into a freeholder. This character also has the jealous trait, which interacts with that very poorly. So like, already he got a negative little moodlet whenever anybody had something nicer than him. But now there's like particular kinds of work that he just won't do. And I do not know how to solve the Mitchie problem. The guy's name is Mitchie.
That is great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Mitchie very nearly died malaria because the other doctor was born with a genetic dependency. The other person with a medical skill was born with a genetic dependency to like a particular, basically like sci-fi coca leaves. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how that worked. And I was like, I don't need to grow drugs because, you know, I don't want to sell them. And also I don't want my guys getting addicted to them. But like, I was like, oh, why is she moving so slowly? And then suddenly she goes into a coma because I've been depriving her of this thing that she genetically needs. And so there's nobody to heal. And so like, I had to send like one guy out on a horse. Cause you can send out your own traders to like go and get better medicine to get them both through their conditions, or to get Mitchie through his malaria so that he didn't die. He was like within 2% of dying, so that he could come out of it in time to nurse the other person back to health, the other person with medical skills. And then today, a whole bunch of these man-eater swarms of animals will come in. A whole bunch of man-eater rats came in, and like on the back of dealing with them, like it's just rats, but there's so many of them, and they got it all. You know, a bunch of my like non-combat guys say, okay, this is a big deal. A bunch of my folks are bedridden from this, and then. This is coinciding with the fall potato harvest. So like my guys are trying to, it's like a two-part process to dig up the potatoes. Then they're left in the field until somebody comes in and hauls them. They're short. We're shorthanded because of this. And then a thunderstorm starts. And what do you know? A lightning bolt strikes in the middle of my potatoes harvest. And I scream, "My taters!" As I send all of my colonists in to like put out the fire so that the winter harvest isn't ruined. Those are... Those are my eaten taters. Oh no.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like how playing this game humanely is playing it on hard mode.
It really is, because like, you know, like what it wants you to do is, you know, really engage and be like a Mad Max warlord, right? Mm-hmm. And a bunch of the kind of expansion stuff. So I got all the expansions for it because I was like, if I'm going to go in, I'm going to go in. Like a bunch of the expansions, you know, give you new and inventive ways to build these torturous, impossible societies. You know, like slavery wasn't a thing until I think it was like the royalty, like the royalty one. Ideologies lets you like give your civilizations like little tags, which change like the tech tree stuff that's available to them and changes the needs there. So like if you have the transhumanist tag, like they're not happy until you rush up the tech tree to start doing like body mods and stuff, or genetic modification and stuff. And then like one of the things that made me, kind of throw this to the top of the list, it kind of made me interested in it again, was the most recent expansion for it is called Anomaly, which adds in, basically like Zerg meets Lovecraft, ancient technology, bug kind of flesh monstrosities. Also like, you know, it, like your starting colony starts next to a monolith, and when you start like researching it, then like weird stuff starts happening as like the xenomorph nanites start swarming to it and making weird stuff happen. And I'll just be like mining in a mountain, and I'll break through a wall, and then out come these, you know, flesh monstrosities that I have to, you know, send a guy in to, you know, to fight, because my miners aren't going around with weapons or anything. This happened a few days ago for me, but got a distress beacon from a nearby colony that I was on good terms with. And they said, hey, unknown threat. And so I showed up and all of the buildings were covered with pulsating flesh sacks and stuff.
Oh, yay.
And like the colonists were all gone. Or they had retreated to a different place. So like I'm going through with this like 3-person rescue squad trying to destroy enough of the flesh to open up the buildings to get inside. Basically the colonists who called in said, yeah, you know, please come and, you know, deal with this star for us. You can keep whatever you find. And so like just slowly breaching and clearing through this colony, fighting off these things that are using very non-standard tactics, like breaking up into smaller, more threatening enemies as they go, and, you know, trying to get through this and then ultimately deciding, all right, fuck it, take what you can, we're getting out of here because this is no longer worth putting you in danger for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This makes me want to go watch Alien or go play Returnal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's neat. Like I've put a bunch of time into it again because of the horrors, and right. I'm trying to play it humanely, which, you know, no cannibalism, no drugs, no like raiding or anything. Trying to be a constructive member of society. Ultimately, I want to take down the empire that's there if I can.
Indeed,
you know, and set everybody free for the planet to be, you know, this benevolent anarchism, you know, anarchist collective. So we'll see if that works.
Do you think this will push you anywhere else in the genre, like games like Dwarf Fortress? I don't recall if you've ever played that one or not.
So I've fucked around with it. I have not touched it since the big Steam release that came out that kind of gives a bunch of quality of life features. I'm curious about it. You know, like when RimWorld came out, I played it for about 8 hours straight. And I was like, okay, this game is dangerous. I cannot let myself have it because I had fallen prey to Prison Architect before. and, you know, kind of a similar ethos, although that one is kind of like more pointedly trying to like say something about the horrors of, for-profit prisons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, RimWorld just kind of seems to be, you know, a little bit like wallowing in crapulence and giving you a lot of toys and temptations to be authoritarian, which is it's politically a little bit weird. But yeah, so like Prison Architect is my main one that I've done before with it. And there are other ones, like there's a Frostpunk alike called Ixion, which is about managing a space station, which I'm really curious about. And then of course, Dwarf Fortress itself.
Right.
I'm just giving my permission to engage in these whole games because of the horrors, you know? So like,
you gotta do whatever you gotta do.
Yes. I sound like I'm justifying it, but like, I genuinely feel a little bit guilty going in and like not playing it's something that has a definitive end. You know, it's like, for me, it's kind of has that same like, ant farm appeal that, like The Sims has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any questions about RimWorld? I told you my funniest stories, which is what this game excels at.
But those were great funny stories.
My taters.
Yes. I don't have any kind of
additional. I'm impressed you're playing them because those games are so like daunting to me.
Oh yeah.
It just seems the complexity is just so high that I get scared off too easily.
Like that's a part of the appeal, which is like, okay, doing something really simple is actually like stupid complicated. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I need to figure out how to do this. Okay. How does this work? Because the way that I intuitively would do it is not making sense. Like learning learning the way that like pathing and combat and like the task allocation system and priority system works is one thing. And then learning how to optimize it is kind of a secondary challenge that I like getting in. So it's like, okay, I totally fucked up like the design of my kitchen. Like I put it in the wrong place. I put my production facilities in the wrong place compared to the dorms. This is completely indefensible. You know, the walking paths are bad. So like, I use those resources. I am now going to like try and refactor in place. It's a little bit like Satisfactory in that way where it's while this thing is, running and keeping people alive, I need to rip up enough of it and optimize it so we can grow further.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Satisfactory is so good.
Satisfactory is a really good game. Yeah, so playing RimWorld, I will probably be in this hole for the foreseeable. We'll see. I will try and at least extract some fun stories out of it.
Is that a game you would stream ever?
Or yeah, is yeah.
That... Okay.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun to stream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's what I've been playing.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis was going to be here, so he posted the question and then was not able to be here. So I will read it. It's cliche, it's overdone, and I'm here for it. What video game tropes do you love, no matter how often you see them? I'll get us started here with somebody from Slack, Maniop, who writes, being overleveled for a hyped up boss to the degree that you finish the fight before the music really kicks in or they get to finish a line of dialogue. Most Fallout or Elder Scroll bosses get about as far as never should have come. bonus, defeating them with power that would turn the average person to ash. But the next cutscene is them simply stumbling a bit and then they die from a gunshot or something pathetic.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is fun. Just to get that I learned the term Alpha Strike against my will. And now I have to use it because it's actually a really good way to describe it, but just figuring out a way to just blast somebody is a good is a good time. Let's see, Jala, what does Chicken Riggy say?
Chicken Riggy says, I'm not a Nintendo person typically, but it's got to be Bowser. At this point, he's a trope unto himself. And the way they've tweaked and reinvented the Bowser fight over the decades is usually at least smile-worthy.
Yeah. Although the Galaxy, the Mario Galaxy version of that feels like the best to me. I'm just gonna say.
I don't remember the Bowser fights in that game, actually, because I just one-shotted that game when it came out and I haven't played it since. But
yeah, it's just it uses the small planets planet size to make getting around behind him to get the attacks in a little bit more tricky.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, I'm normally in for the escape the falling building / base. Good examples include Halo or the Uncharted series.
Yeah. The Uncharted series is really good for that.
I was going to say Halo 1. I feel like that's like the bar to try and beat.
Oh, yeah.
The last level.
The last level, which is all like one big warthog map dash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just love when a game's like 10 minutes, figure it out, go. It's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And Lion Yeti adds in, the post-climax escape sequence. I mean, this is like it's a Metroid thing too.
Mm.
Yeah. Going back over to the Slack ones, Rookie writes, I will always love a nice shiny double jump. It doesn't even matter the genre of the game. I would have double jumped my way through all of Daventry if Sierra had been mad enough to let me. Daventry being the kingdom from King's Quest. I do like the idea of giving a double jump in a game with no platforming and really no just let me let my Sims teach my Sims to double jump, please.
Oh, and on that note, one thing I can't stand that's a trope is any game that isn't like something that it has platforming in it that you can't get over this knee-high wall.
Oh, yeah.
That irritates the crap out of me.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah. Jala, what does Spirit Wolf 85 say?
Spirit Wolf 85 says, I've always been particularly fond of enemies and allies being absolutely bodied unexpectedly. Lots of buildup for a boss, only to have them be crushed or swatted away by a much larger foe like the Bat Boss in Aria of Sorrow or the Fat Official in Demon's Souls.
That is such a good moment in Demon's Souls. Demon's Souls, all throughout the Boletaria levels, kind of like the castle levels, there is this character called Fat Official, you know, portly guy with a Guy Fawkes mask on and a shitty hat, who's like constantly harrying you the entire time and running away. And then it looks like, you know, near the end of 1-3, he is going to be the boss. Like, you finally caught up with him. And then he gets run through by the actual boss, this like haunted warrior called the Penetrator. just completely running, completely runs him through. And then you have to fight the Penetrator. Yeah.
That sounds like a horrible sex toy.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty menacing. The semiotics of that are not wholesome, I think. Yeah. Let's see. That was Ben. What does Threnza say?
Threnza says, starting on an RPG with an OP party member. Sure, they're going to die or betray you, but which is it? Bonus points if you can steal all their stuff before they leave.
Oh, yeah. That is one of my favorite things. And it's not something you can do in, like, newer RPGs so much. Yeah. But, like, boy, do I love taking everything off of somebody before they go off and die.
Yeah. Later. You know.
Good luck.
If you're going to die, you shouldn't die tired from carrying all of this good gear. Yeah. Let's see. Michael writes, going backward at the start of a game and being rewarded for it, like going back to your house and Pokemon and getting a potion, make me feel smart, even though it happens every time. Yeah. I mean, the apotheosis of this is in a game like Hollow Knight, where it's like, oh, you go backward, you can go a little bit, but eventually after you get a new ability, it becomes like, oh, there's a whole other half of the map that's back there. Yeah. Jella, what does Strawberry Jam say?
Strawberry Jam says, I'm always a sucker for when a game has you play through parts from previous games, especially when it changes the art style significantly. The Game Boy level in Kirby's Adventure, recreating parts of Kirby's Dream Land, was a pure delight as a kid, even before it became tied to nostalgia.
Yeah, this is basically going to be mine. I also like, you know, going back to a previously an opening area that was previously inaccessible. So like going back to the Undead Asylum in Dark Souls 1.
Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. That is always cool. I can't remember the first time that I saw this, but like it's done really well in Dead Space 2. Where you go back into the ship from Dead Space 1 that has been impounded on the space station where you're at. And it's like, oh my God, I have to go back in. Oh no. Yeah. Let's see. Ben, what does Fred say?
Fred says, the final boss theme, either quoting or remixing the title theme, coincidentally identical to my favorite trope in anime. Heck, the final boss music of Sonic Adventure 1 and 2 just being their title themes directly is probably why Live and Learn in particular is so memorable.
Done really well in Elden Ring. Those little plink plonks that you get in the title screen going into that kind of swelling choral music. You don't hear that throughout the entire game, and then boom, it's the music for the boss fight against Radagon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. Robinson writes, I love post-game challenges in JRPGs, the dungeons and bosses that are harder than the final boss. And if there's a super boss with an HP number a couple more digits than the norm, then I want to tackle that puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so pointless too, because like you do it. It's the greatest challenge. There's still more game to do. Usually it's not post game. It's like, okay, I do this before the final encounter or whatever. And then you get a reward that cannot be possibly useful to you because right. you already did the hardest thing. Right. It's so stupid and I love it. And Jala, round us out with Zaud.
Zaud says, I'm always down for a victory lap portion, either pre or post final boss. Let me just absolutely wreck everyone for a bit.
I mean, pre final boss, that's a boss rush.
Yep.
It's like Mega Man style thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've already said mine, going back to either a previous game in a series or going to an earlier area you thought you had left behind entirely. That's weird because I don't like when Anna Orlando shows back up in Dark Souls 3, but that's primarily because of broader Dark Souls 3 problems. Anyway, Jala, how about you? What's yours?
I have a few little ones. So anytime there's an incredibly cool character who's actually a dork.
Okay.
Looking at Leon.
Mm-hmm.
But also like various others, but Leon was first in my mind here. Also along the Resident Evil theme, the main character using the weakest base weapon in cutscenes, despite whatever you have equipped and whatever you have gotten from like levels and stuff playing the game.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's some more nonsense that just every time I see it, I'm like, yeah, he absolutely is not doing that with a 9mm or whatever, you know. And then the last one is some kind of random thing that you can interact with over and over again that says something and maybe says a couple of different things, but you keep clicking on it and keep clicking on it, keep hitting it with your sword or whatever. And if you fuck with it enough times, something happens.
It's the Kukos in Legend of Zelda, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Nice. So. Ben, how about you?
For me, it's like the context switching games. And so the one I'm thinking of in particular is like Uncharted 2, where it's like you wake up in a Tibet town or whatever, and you have to like refigure out how you got there. Anytime games do that, I'm really into it. Like, especially if it's like a character switch and you start playing as someone you've never played as before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. No, all of these are a little bit tired, but still like when it pops up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nice. A lot of answers that time. I think the move to Blue Sky has been successful.
Yeah. I also posted it in my Discord.
Oh.
So a few people popped up from there too.
Very good.
I think independent of the amount of feedback we've got, it's been a good move too.
right. Although I will say that one of the weathermen here locally reported somebody for saying like for harassment and stuff and hate speech for saying some stuff about, you know, oh, this person likes their perverts in bathrooms with little kids or something like that. And then reported it. And then Blue Sky said that they did nothing wrong. So Blue Sky is exactly the same as every other social media at this point.
Yeah,
now, the overall crowd that's on Blue Sky is for the most part of a better ilk generally. Mm-hmm. But it's everywhere. It's not you know, isolated or anything.
Yeah, Blue Sky's trust and safety head, Aaron, is just a real piece of shit and has actively antagonized specifically the trans people on Blue Sky. Sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, join us in our inescapable hell. We post these on Blue Sky at thelevelpodcast.bsky.social. Watch for those to go up on Monday afternoons, those questions, so you can answer them. And thanks to Dennis for posting.
Oh yeah, also that guy.
Yeah. The end boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Jala, normally I give I ask a leading question about what the story is. I got nothing for this. This is really dumb.
This is some bullshit. So the co-founder of Call of Duty's Treyarch and most recently president of Skydance Interactive, who made The Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners, Peter Ackerman, I don't know, has pleaded guilty to crashing a drone into a firefighting plane assisting with the recent LA wildfires. The crash occurred after this guy ignored the temporary drone restrictions in order to survey the Palisades fire before it lost control. The plane's left wing was hit, and this caused it to get all fucked up. So he did this pleading guilty as part of a plea agreement. He's hoping to skip jail by pleading guilty and serving 150 hours of community service. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I didn't even mention as part of my banter, I went to go see a comedian named Andy Huggins, who is a very adorable 75-year-old man. Mm-hmm. From here, Houston. He has a special on Amazon called Early Bird Special. You mm-hmm. should go check it out. It's free with Prime. Mm-hmm. He's very, very funny. One of the things that he said, he was telling a story about something or another. He's known as the king of one-liners. Look him up on YouTube. He's very good. Mm-hmm. And anyway, one of the things that he said at one point was, I've had to do community service. And for my community service, I left the community. So yeah, Call of Duty publisher Activision, just in other news aside from this dipshit crashing his drone into mm-hmm. This fighter plane, Call of Duty publisher Activision donated $1 million to the LA fire relief, probably in an oops, that was one of our guys.
Yeah.
He's definitely fired now. He was already gone, I think. Anyway, mm-hmm. Along with proceeds from the LA fire relief ultra skin for Black Ops 6 and Warzone. So that's good. And mm-hmm. then Humble Bundle is currently offering a collection of bundles to support those affected by LA fires. And also currently Necrosoft's Brandon Sheffield has recently been putting together an itch.io bundle to help those affected with direct financial assistance rather than going through a big thing. So very cool stuff. There are some ways that you can indirectly donate, or of course you can find a good place to drop some coin as well, I'm sure, if you have any to spare.
Yeah, no. So just rebuilding is going to take a very long time.
Yep.
Yeah. What a stupid thing to do, just yes. to like feel like, oh, my toy is immune to laws, I guess, you know, yeah. like
it's entitlement.
Yeah. You know,
I think this is one of those cases where you need to charge people a percentage of their net worth. Yes. So it's right? like, okay, you're going to get punished for this, but then the same law will apply to other people and not be as harsh. So.
Yeah.
Right.
As Final Fantasy Tactics taught us, if the punishment for a crime is a fine, then it is only a crime for the poor.
Right.
Mm. Yep. Normally I'd be like, oh yeah, no, there's keep people out of prison and probably, but then you start looking at like a Call of Duty studio co-founder and it's like, I don't know that there's a way to fix you if you're doing this actually.
Right.
If your priority on this was to get a drone up.
Well, also I'm conflicted because I also don't want to have anybody have to pay to have him in prison either.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean,
like, oh, fuck. And also bullshit. Like you can't like you can't actually like you cannot estimate really the cost of having that plane out of commission. Yeah. Too
right.
God,
and not only that, I think it was a Canadian plane if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah
So like another reason for Canada to dislike us.
Yeah, no, they we're yeah, please,
not that we did it, but you know.
Well, no but like yeah. you know, they can say whatever they want.
General yeah. rule of thumb, if you've made a Canadian angry, you are the bad guy.
Yes,
right.
Probably. Yeah. Sorry. I just keep restarting it by saying, God, what a dumb thing. I'm going to take us out of that cycle. So I've been bringing up The Sims a lot this episode, actually. Yeah. Because I've got Sims on the mind, not just because I've been playing RimWorld, which is kind of Sims-like, having your little ant farm there, but because EA has had a 25th anniversary celebration for the Sims franchise. I don't really care about the celebration, but I do care that they have repackaged and updated and basically ported for modern systems. The original The Sims and The Sims 2 both being sold with all of the expansions together for like $40.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't think that The Sims gets much better than The Sims 3. Like, that is where, you know, I think it kind of reached the height. But, like, just having the ability to play The Sims and The Sims 2, I believe, is a very important thing, because it is hard to overstate the importance of those games.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm curious about this. I want to kind of go back and see, because, like, I don't know, the version of The Sims 1 that I have in my head, probably not very reflective of what it was actually like to play.
Right, right.
A pool of dead bodies with no ladders anywhere.
Yeah. I don't know. Do people here, do you two have, either of you have Sims experience stuff?
Nope.
No?
Coincidentally, I think I only ever played it at Jen's house when I was a kid. Dennis's wife, so.
Yeah. I remember, like, trying to justify why I wanted this game, you know, because everything that I, you know, played, it was all, like, you know, these action games, horror games, fantasy RPG. It's, like, kind of easy to say, oh yeah, this is a game about people trying to save the world or whatever. But then to go to your parents and be like, yeah, no, I basically want to supervise somebody's everyday life in what I'm going to pointedly not refer to as a dollhouse. Because right. That'll make you treat me weird.
Well, and that like base description of The Sims is, and the fact that, like, think of my history of games. I don't do well in sandboxes, because, like, yes, I will wander off and go do something else and then, you know, have chaos. I probably would have enjoyed Sims if I had played it, but, like, I was pretty well convinced that I didn't want to play it because I was so interested in narrative focus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why I never played it. It's not not because of, you know, anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll probably be picking this up. That might be a fun stream at some point.
Oh yeah. I'm sure that would be fun.
Yeah. I've got another one. Cool. This is just super quick, but I'm very happy to see that they have done it. Capcom has continued to knock it out of the park with their own preservation work. Over the past year, they've put out Resident Evil 1-3 with good old games with GOG. You know, updated, runs on modern systems great. Like, you can even, like, mod it, which is real cool. Like, that's how I did the Kendo's Cut thing on Duckstream. Capcom has continued that partnership, and they have put out in the past week or so Dino Crisis 1 and 2. Again, just, you buy it, you own it. It runs on a modern system, no problem. It is not locked to a console or some kind of weird library that can be pulled away. It just feels more permanent now that it's there. And that is neat, because those are games that basically nobody remembers, but they're super interesting. I like Dino Crisis 2 much more as a game. I think it is more fun, even if it is less horror-based. But yeah, the fact that you can just go get them now, is good. And I want it to be successful so more people do that.
Right. That would be awesome.
Yeah. That's all I've got. Ben, did you find anything, or are you, you letting us get out of here early?
You're picking up my slack today, having stories.
All right.
Attaboy.
Cool. Well, how do you both feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Record time.
I don't know that it's record time. I think we've had a couple that have been in the, like, 1 hour.
Yeah,
hour. Really? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. In the past, yeah. Sometimes that happens, and it's fine. I get to go to sleep early. But yeah, thank you so much for listening to level number 531. We really appreciate you taking the time. You're listening to a podcast. You've listened to them before. You know what to do to help us. Go to Patreon and back DuckFeed. That's patreon.com/DuckFeedTV. Leave a rating or review if you can. Tell your friends. Participate in the multiplayer on Blue Sky. Spread the word online. All of that is stuff that helps us out. Jala, what is happening at Jala's place?
Yeah, so the last episode that was tied to a media was on Brahma Yugam, and Cole, you were on that episode. Mm-hmm. And so was Dave from Monster Dear Monster. So y'all can go check that out. Also coming out the same day that this releases will be my episode on trauma response, which this is one of those longer form topical episodes that, you know, I cover on my show with some kind of regularity. We primarily are discussing the book, The Body Keeps the Score, but also going through just kind of talking about basics about trauma and different ways that you can work through trauma in key points about it. So like, even though it's a heavy topic, Desiree and I go through it in like a you know, like serious, but not like heavy, heavy kind of way. So it's not heavy listening, in my opinion, but it is important listening, especially for our day and age. So yeah, definitely check a look at that. The next topical episode will probably be on flavor. I got to iron out exactly my guesting times and stuff like that to see if it'll be flavor or microbiome of the body. But one of those two things will be the next topical episode. So you can see that coming down the pipes eventually at Jalachanda Place.
Neat. Is there anything I'm forgetting?
No.
Okay. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I'm Jalachan and all the places that I may be found, which are currently Blue Sky and Substack.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
I have four because I didn't have any last time.
Nice.
Okay. I didn't have any.
Great.
I had one.
Okay.
You first, Ben.
My taters.
Yes. I also had my taters all in caps with an exclamation point.
Okay. Cool.
I also had a very long title, one of those very long ones. Nobody checked to see if the door was locked. When I started sounding all flumbly earlier and I was like, and just kind of head hemming and hawing, it's because I was trying to type that down furiously before I forgot it. And that's a very long sentence, but.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, and then I also have Uno Reverse.
Uh-huh.
Because that's also Gen Z speak. Uh-huh. And the Mitchy problem.
what's the Uno Reverse? Is that what, like, I've not seen that in the wild. Is it literally just I'm turning this back, the situation back on you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, what if it was the other way? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Cool. Context. I'm not entirely out of it. I'm torn between the Mitchy problem and my taters, so right. I will let you two decide.
I think the Mitchy problem is funnier if you don't know what's going on. I mean, like, My Taters is also extremely good.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know.
I think I might want to preserve the My Taters moment.
Okay. Go for it.
Ben, how do you feel?
I love My Taters. That I
you like love you taters, in general. Yeah. So. Go for it.
Okay. I think that I'm leaning toward the Mitchy problem. Ben, are your feelings going to be hurt?
I eat potatoes every other day, so I'm happy no matter what. I have my taters, so we don't need my taters as a title.
Lightning struck my taters. it was right in the middle of it, too. The game was just being a dick. All right. The Mitchy problem, it is decided.